Education Committee to order. And we will jump around as authors become available with the bills. We're dealing with the number of fund transfer bills today. And Senator Harrington actually isn't a fund transfer bill. It's a little bit different to give us some variety, but we'll start off with variety.
Really was hoping somebody else was going to go first. For the record, I want that noted. So.
Well, if Senator Harrington, Senator Koch is here, would you prefer that she went first? And
well, I'd certainly be happy to step aside for the lady. So.
All right. Okay, we'll bring you back.
Thanks.
As long as you.
All right. Well,
You got the feel of sitting at the witness table anyway.
Chivalrous.
I apologize, Madam Chair. And Senator Daley is coming. We were just having a meeting, so he'll be here in a moment.
Sure. I believe a quorum is present.
There.
Senator Koch, welcome to the Education Committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Members, I have before you Senate File 272, which has to do with a fund transfer for the Delano School District, but I also have an amendment that would add a fund transfer for Monticello School District, and Madam Chair said that maybe we just could put those two together into one bill and hear both at the same time, so I appreciate that.
So let us, this being an author's amendment, is there a motion to adopt
motion.
The A1 amendment to Senate File 272? Senator Henn?
Yes, I'll make that.
Moves that action. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Same sign. The motion prevails. So the bill is now merged.
Well, thank you. So, Madam Chair and members, what I would do then is defer to the superintendents. We have Dr. Mm-hmm. John Sweet here from Delano, and we'll start with Dr. Sweet to talk about the Delano transfer, and then we'll move on to Monticello with Superintendent Johnson. So, okay.
Welcome, Dr. Sweet.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Sweet, Superintendent, Delano Public Schools. Thank you for taking up this bill. In 2007, our school district received approval from the Department of Education to use alternative facility bonds and capital lease bonds in accordance with statute for the purpose of implementing mechanical ventilation and facility management system improvements in several of our buildings. The debt service on these improvements is being paid for through the energy savings resulting in the mechanical upgrades. After the first full year of implementation, the savings have exceeded expectations, and we are well on our way to making this a cost-neutral project for the school district. In the process of bidding these upgrades, the bids came in under the estimate, and we have about $235,000 remaining in our building fund that we cannot use for other facility needs. Last fall, we had a boiler inspection in our community ed building, and our insurance carrier informed us and directed us that boiler needed to be replaced before the next heating season, which begins this coming fall. The unspent dollars in the building fund, along with the directive to replace the boiler, is what really gives rise to Senate File 272. The engineer's estimate to replace the boiler is $278,000. So the $235,000 that sits in the building fund would nearly cover the cost of the boiler, with the remainder coming from our operating capital. There's no fiscal bill note attached to the bill, as it would not be an expense to the state. So on behalf of our of the Delano School Board, I ask your positive consideration for Senate File 272.
Thank you, Dr. Sweet. Are there any questions that you might have? I think the one thing, a transfer from a debt service fund to an operating fund doesn't affect the state monies. It does have an impact on our levy target, because normally that would, by statute, go back to the taxpayer. So we do have to count that as this decision as one that increases the levies, and it, to the extent that that is the of the amount that is in the bill. But we have done these before. I don't know if anybody has any concerns or questions about the project.
Madam Chair, I think it's interesting. I've been here 5 years, served on the on this committee for four, never had a fund transfer, and then this year now I've got two. So, mm-hmm. Sometimes things happen.
So that's Delano's, and now Delano, it is amended Monticello. With Monticello. Why don't you go forward with the Monticello fund transfer request?
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you very much for considering this bill on behalf of our school district.
Would you say your name?
Jim Johnson, Superintendent, Monticello School District.
Thank you.
In 2007, the Monticello School District, very similar story to what happened in Delano, received approval for a $4.6 million alternate facilities project to update HVAC systems in our Pinewood Elementary School and at our middle school. That project was approved, and we went forward with that project. The bids and the project came in significantly below what had been budgeted, and we currently have $547,000 in our debt service fund. It's in our debt service fund because it was been transferred from the construction fund where it was in 2009 to debt service based on a recommendation by our auditors. So that is where those dollars now sit. We have a number of aging buildings. Our middle school, portions of that was built in 1950, 1960s, and the 1970s. We have three boilers in that building. Two of them were put in the 1950s. One was put in 1971. We are very concerned about the condition of those, and we feel that we need to try to do something to upgrade those. We're looking at somewhere in the ballpark estimates from a consulting firm that we use to help us out with it of about $500,000 to upgrade those boilers and put a safe long-term solution to our heating system in that building. So that would be the request, is that we would be able to transfer from the debt service a permanent basis to our capital account using those dollars for updates to our boiler system at the middle school and get ourselves up to speed there. What this helps us with by doing this, it saves about $500,000 in our existing capital. We have about $1 million per year in capital. This frees up dollars that we can then use for textbooks, for computers, for the types of things that we need to do to meet the needs of our kids and meet our goal of increasing student achievement across the board and eliminating the achievement gap that exists. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much. And if the majority leader gives us a levy target other than zero, we should be able to accommodate something.
Madam Chair, I'll talk to her. I would, Chair, and perhaps council can help us a little bit. I'm noticing on the A1 amendment, and I'm not certain why, but 1.2 of the A1 amendment, page 1, line 8, says to delete building construction fund and insert debt redemption fund. I assume that would apply to the original Delano bill, and indeed, we don't need to do that. It is in the building construction fund for Delano. It is not. It is in the debt redemption fund for Monticello, but it is not in the debt redemption fund for Delano. It is from the building construction fund. So I'm sorry about that. I didn't catch that before the A1 amendment. But,
Madam Chair and Senator Koch, in most cases, we were just trying to conform with standard practice and referring, but we will confer with the superintendents and make sure that we've got them in the right place. I think it would be our hope at a staff level that you would give us authority to make sure that we're moving the money from the right place in all of these when it's finally adopted into the overall bill.
Thank you, Mr. Noman. It is our intent with the these fund transfer bills that we will lay them over for inclusion in the omnibus bill and instruct the staff to make adjustments to the language to conform to what our needs are. So that Senator Bana.
Madam Chair, and I apologize for coming in late, and so I just heard the Monticello. I didn't hear the whole Delano story, but I understand it seems to be that similar. And it's just interesting. I've been hearing a lot of construction bids coming in under right now because the cost of money and because people are so hungry. And so I just wonder, on a statewide basis, if this isn't happening in a with more prevalence than you might think, and do we have any obligation, and again, I support these, so, but just as a policy, what is our belief with regard to should the taxpayer have any say in that, and where we stand as a committee?
Thank you, Senator Bonhoff. This is a discussion I think we have every year when we've had, you know, one or two, sometimes none, but our transfers from that debt, because our statutory policy is that this would go back, and the excess in these funds would go back to the taxpayer as a tax reduction, a property tax reduction. And so that's why it takes special legislation and acknowledgement of that fact when we do it. Now, if you're expecting more of it, if you're talking about going to establishing a policy that would just apply rather than acting on, which we sometimes talk about too, I think that's up to the members of the committee and what kind of recommendation we would make, but I think we should exercise some caution in that the people that, you know, did vote for those that have gone to a referendum for this purpose. Were both of these referendum? Neither one of these were referendum.
Yeah.
But it's still, because that was through the alternative facilities.
Yep. Madam Chair, and I think that might be the distinction, that the alternative facilities wasn't a referendum, so it's not like we're going back on something we promised the taxpayers, so I feel more comfortable in that. But
Council, does our law, in terms of that going back to the taxpayer, differentiate between whether it was originally a referendum or not?
No.
So that policy or that practice still is in, that policy is still in place, but you've distinguished it in terms of practice.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and again, it's more rhetorical. Just, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see more of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Senator Bonhoff and members, I think the these two are particularly appropriate from the standpoint that you are taking money that was from the alternative facilities for use for older structures, and you're using it for this in a different application toward the same end of improving the boilers in these older facilities in order to keep them functional and make the buildings continue to be functional. So I'm rationalizing for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Madam Chair. I think you're completely correct.
So can we – I will lay these on the table for a possible –
Madam Chair?
Excuse me. Senator Wieger.
Quick question. Thank you, Madam Chair. And for each of the school district reps, may I assume that each of your school boards has unanimously approved a resolution of support and that there is not controversy amongst your constituents on this issue?
That's correct, Senator Wieger, if I may. Our board unanimously approved the communications that I sent to Senator Koch, Senator Olson, and Representative McDonald.
On our part, there has not been a vote. Our board is in support of it. We've dealt with it at a committee level. All board members are aware of it, but it has not been at a public meeting, and there's not been a vote.
Okay. So, Superintendent, I would maybe suggest that that might be a wise decision to make. We aren't, you know, to the final action, but why don't you follow that?
We'll take care of that.
Thank you, Superintendent. All right, we'll lay these two on the table and move on. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, members of the committee.
Senator James, welcome to the committee. Senator Dames has Senate File 338.
Madam Chair, committee members, I am here with you today. For the record, my name is Senator Gary Dames. I'm here to introduce Senate File 338. Senate File 338 is a bill for an act relating to education, permitting a fund transfer independent school district number 837 in Medelia, Minnesota. With me today, I have two folks testifying. One of the gentlemen is Brent Christensen. Brent is a member of the Medelia School Board, and Brian Grinnell, the superintendent of the Medelia School Board. So at this time, I will turn it over to these two gentlemen, and they can explain the reason for the transfer of the funds.
So who's first? If you identify your name for the record.
Brian Grinnell.
Brian Grinnell, thank you. And the superintendent?
Superintendent. We are asking for a fund transfer, and it's similar to the other districts that have already been up here. We had a all facilities construction bond that was just completed in 2009. We have a surplus of $427,000. Again, due to the economy, people were hungry, and the bonds were less interest than what we thought. I can say that we have happy taxpayers because our levy has been reduced by 20% the last 2 years because of the efforts that we did in health and safety. But it's similar to the other school districts. We would like to, the dollars we put into the capital fund. We have roofs of about $300,000 that we need to do. We have some infrastructure and technology that we need to update, and that will help cover those costs.
Okay. Are there any questions of Superintendent Grinnell?
Madam
Senator
Chair.
Senator Daley. Yeah.
Senator Dames, is there a fiscal note related to this?
Yes, there is, and the fiscal note shows no cost, no plus or no minus to the general fund.
Senator Daley, that would have the same, it would be the same situation as the others related to the levy impact.
I assume so, but I just wanted to confirm for the record.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, would you like a copy for the record?
Do we have a fiscal note here? I don't have one in my pile, but I'm sure that we have it. If we don't, we'd be happy to accept a copy.
I'll leave you a copy.
Senator Hinn?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question for the superintendent. The money that's in the construction account, was that voter approved?
No, it was not.
Okay. Thank you.
That's the alternative facilities with the age and size of the building.
There was a board resolution that went ahead with this. Maybe Brent can talk to this.
Madam Chair, members, Brent Christensen, Medillia Public School Board, and we did, this has the full support of our school board, and we have a resolution that's supporting that.
Okay, very good. Any further questions? If not, we will lay Senate File 338 on the table for a possible conclusion in our omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members. We appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Senator Brown, I see you here. Senator Brown, welcome, and you have two bills, Senate File 34 and Senate File 427. Do you want to take Senate File 34 first?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I am here today to introduce Senate File 34. Becker School District Number 726, this would permanently transfer up to $500,000 from its debt redemption fund to the undesignated general fund. And I'd also like to introduce Dr. Malone. Dr. Stephen Malone is superintendent of the Becker School District.
Welcome, Superintendent.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate you hearing my bill. This does have the support of our school district. This particular bill relates to a construction project in the Becker School District that was completed in 2000. It was for two school buildings, and they were designed with a geothermal system with an effort to be energy efficient. Unfortunately, there was a design flaw in the engineering and architectural work, and the geothermal systems actually were not, the loops were not buried as deep as they should have been. So the top of those geothermal loops are actually in the frost line. And we've been working over the years to litigate a remedy for this. The engineering firm ultimately went bankrupt, and we were awarded $9,000 from the courts. The architect passed away, and we were awarded $100,000 from the estate. Those two figures together do not cover our legal fees that we incurred through the years to try to compensate for the design and the engineering and architectural issue. So we've been trying to remedy the situation over the last 10 years or so. The best solution we've come to date is that we found by reducing the fresh air intake and sacrificing indoor air quality, we're able to keep the temperature up in the classrooms, except when we get into the double digits below zero. Even then, with shutting off all the outside air, we're challenged to keep the temperature into the upper 60s. So this is a situation where there is a nexus between this fund transfer and the original construction project. In terms of the tax impact, looking back at our bond referendum literature, we did calculate the tax impacts at 105% to compensate for the potential delinquencies. We have not levied at 105% for any of the past 10 years, so the taxpayers have actually been paying less than we showed that they would pay in the campaign literature. We have a couple potential solutions, if you'll permit this $500,000 fund transfer. One is a traditional mechanical solution using fossil fuels that would apply boilers and traditional mechanical remediation. The other solution that we're actually more interested in would use solar panels to provide additional heat on the geothermal loop. That solution is contingent upon some grant applications that we have pending. But in either solution, the $500,000 would mitigate the construction flaws and allow us to reheat that water as it comes back in through the ground source geothermal and bring our buildings up to a proper temperature and allow appropriate indoor air quality for our children. There's no state expense associated with this fund balance transfer request.
Are there any questions of Dr. Malone or of Senator Brown? Senator Rieger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the litigation, was your judgment more than the $109,000?
Dr. Malone.
The judgment was never awarded. The bankruptcy court awarded the $9,000. The $100,000 was from the deceased architect's estate.
Well, Madam Chair, and you know, I support the transfer in that, but just more curious in the litigation, when you accepted the bid, was it stipulated that they had professional liability coverage?
Yes, it was.
So why did you go to the estate as opposed to directly to the liability carrier?
And I'm sorry, I don't have all of those details, Senator. I was not serving in the district at that time.
You might check that out. That would be your deep pocket.
Senator Sieben?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the author, I believe, or the superintendent, the fiscal note does indicate that there is an impact on the general fund, on the state general fund, if I'm looking at the right fiscal note. So could explain what that is.
No. Madam Chair.
Senator Brown?
Senator Sieben, no. For the Becker bill, there is no fiscal impact to the state general fund for this fiscal note.
Oh, I'm looking at the wrong one. Sorry.
Is there any further discussion or questions of the author? If not, we will lay this bill over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Thank you very much for being here to explain the situations, and we wish you well.
Thank you.
Next bill is Senate File 427. Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm here to introduce Senate File 427, Elk River School District, number 728. This bill is to permanently transfer funds from its debt redemption fund to the undesignated general fund over a two-year fiscal period, July 1st, 2011 to ending June 30th, 2013. 2013.
So that is the request. Who's going to give us an explanation and defense?
I sure will. I'm Dr. Mark Bezik, Superintendent of Schools with the Elk River School District, and with me is Randy Anderson, who is our Executive Director of Business Services. To begin with, thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing our request this morning. For those of you who don't know, Elk River is a northwestern suburb of the metro with about 13,000 learners. We're the eighth largest district in the state. Our request is a fund transfer from our debt service reserve fund to our general fund. This is a vote. These are voter approved funds, and our school board has approved this action. We carry one of the highest debt service loads in the state of Minnesota, close to $200 million, because of all of our rapid growth, and we have another bill relating to that also. The funds we plan to use is to protect our extremely fragile budget. We presently offer minimal programming options to our students with relatively high class sizes compared to the metro schools. We manage roughly about $120 million budget, and we struggle to maintain a 5% fund balance, which when you balance it all out, we roughly burn through about $2.5 million a week, and we roughly have about 2 to 3 weeks operating capital. Exasperating our budget woes further is the governor's cap on the special education reimbursement, which is going to cost us this year an additional $2.5 million and over the next biennium about $4 million. So we're struggling to make ends meet every year as we go through here. So regardless of how the outcome of the session, this request is critical for our continued operation, keeping in the black, and that's what we're looking at. We just saw the fiscal note on it just now, and I think where it says in the assumptions here, it points to us having about a 9.6 fund balance, undesignated. Our undesignated is right between 6 and 7 million. It's not as high as this is at present time. And if there's any questions relating to our specifics of our budget, Randy is here to answer those.
Could we, Mr. Anderson?
Yes.
Madam Chair. The business officer, would you mind explaining that
the
general fund impact, we need some additional. This is not like the ones that we've heard thus far, so it's not from a debt redemption fund to, it isn't from the debt redemption fund, but to the general fund. So that does create a...
Madam Chair.
A general fund, state general fund impact?
Madam Chair and members, I suspect what's going on here is that unlike the previous districts who were essentially off the formula because they were no longer getting any equalization as a result of the value of their property in the district, this district appears to be getting some equalization. So when the department did a calculation of what the price of crediting this back is, there is an aid effect as well by virtue of the fact that they're still getting equalization. We used to see this fairly routinely when districts would come in and ask for a transfer of this ilk, and the equalization formula was still, we haven't adjusted that formula over many years, so many districts are getting priced off the formula. So in most cases, districts are only, it's only a levy effect. This is an example where we're getting both an aid and levy effect.
So, Mr. Anderson, do you want to add to that, or?
Randy Anderson from Elk River. Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, the undesignated amount here is correct, but what happens is there are some designated amounts that aren't recognized that we carry over from year to year for our buildings through various other types of things. Another one is a severance designation that we have from our unreserved fund. So technically, our ANTC went down, which created the equalization to kick in this past year, and that's why we're getting equalization aid this year and next year. So before that, we weren't getting any equalization aid, but it did kick in this year because our ANTC decreased 13%.
Senator DeCray.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm not sure which one I would be approaching this question toward, but
The other requests that we heard were talking about actual dollar amounts, up to a dollar amount, and this one talks about a percentage, an 80%. Can you explain why you can't tie a dollar amount to this?
Well, we could tie $2.56 million to it rather than 80%.
That's a big number.
When we looked at what some of our issues were that were coming up over the next biennium, and this, what I mentioned before was that special ed piece, that's roughly around a $2 million hit to our district. We're a growing district, and our special ed is growing rapidly also. And, again, this is just another way to plug the hole of dollars leaving, you know, the general fund and going through cutbacks. We cut $6 million 2 years ago to prepare for this biennium, and we're sitting right now in an okay position where we hope not to have to lay off any educators this next year. However, that's not going to be the case now. We're going to fall off the cliff here real quick with the stimulus money being gone and what have you. That's why our budget is so fragile. We can't withstand these ebbs and flows. And when we have 5 sitting in debt service, that is a possibility to use to keep our operation alive. That's what we're asking you. Could we tie a dollar amount to it? Yeah, we could, rather than the 80%. But the 80% reflects that $2.5 million that we're going to need. Senator Randy, if you...
Senator.
Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Randy Anderson. Senator, when I first came to the district 3 years ago, we got our hands around the finances of the district, and like Dr. Bisick said, Superintendent Bisick said, we trimmed $6 million from our budget. At that time, we were operating between $3 and $4 million of unreserved to aid cash flow. And so what we did was we knew that this past biennium, the current biennium, we were going to be held, our projection was we were going to be held harmless, but no new increases in our projection for the next biennium. So what we've done is we have ramped up our fund balance. We've had some good fortune through contract negotiations, collaborations, through also contract negotiations with our vendors. And so we've built our fund balance up over the last 2 years now. The next 2 years, our projections show that we are going to deficit spend by $10 million over the next 2 years. And so technically what we've done is we were proactive, and these funds, as Dr. Bisick explained, will help us get through that, the next biennium of increasing costs where there's a potential we will not see any state aid increases. So.
Senator Nelson, I think you had your hand up.
Well, actually, my question was answered. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Dr. Bisick, so I have a couple questions. So am I to understand this is still a one-time occurrence you're requesting, even though you've got the percentage in here, you're actually requesting a one-time $2.56 million transfer?
Correct. It's at the board's discretion that we want to use that money over the next 2 years.
Okay. And then my other question, Madam Chair.
Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Dr. Bisick. If you could tell me then what is the percent left in your fund balance? After this, if we were to grant this authority, what would be left in your reserves?
At the end
Mr.
of the,
Anderson.
Sorry. Thank you, Senator. At the end of the next biennium, the projection I'm seeing is about $1.5 million.
And, percent, Madam Chair.
It would be less than, it would be about 1.2%.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bonner.
So with this transfer, you'd still be down at that level?
Right.
So you'd be an SOD?
Well, no, we'd be above water, so.
Madam Chair, and Dr. Bisick or whoever, I'm sorry, I thought that if you're below a certain percent in your reserves, you're considered an SOD?
It's
Mr. Anderson.
Thank you. It's a negative 2.5% of operating expenditures.
Okay.
And we'd still be positive.
Got
at the end of this biennium, next biennium.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Senator Nelson,
yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Anderson, can you tell me about the remaining funds that would be left in that debt redemption fund, the 20%? What do you anticipate will be done with that?
Well, there's a required amount that needs to maintain by statute in there. What is it? I think approximately $690,000. I just got your handout here. So But again, we have to levy the property taxpayers of the district 105% to pay for the debt services of the district. And so that will eventually, again, build up over time. But right now, you know, what would be left would be approximately, you know, somewhere between $600,000 and $700,000.
And then one follow-up, please, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
Mr. Nauman, is there a time period by which then this debt redemption fund, the funds would have to be returned to taxpayers? What is the timeline on that? And would it start over? Would the clock start ticking anew with this particular legislation in place?
Nauman.
Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, I think the way that to think about this is when the voters approve a bond for the purposes of building a building, the bonds are sold, and then the district begins levying with or without equalization, depending on the property value. And they're required to levy 105% of the debt service payment, which, as has been testified, builds up over time. Once the bonds are paid off, the department will do a credit back on a future tax levy equal to that amount that's accumulated over time. Mm-hmm. Unless this committee and the comparable committee in the House and signed into law confirms a transfer that allows those dollars to be repurposed. And that's when you see these traditional fund transfer bills, you see we're exempting essentially statute 475.61 sub 4. That's the statute that calls for the credit back on a future tax levy. Did I answer your question, Senator?
Sort of. I kind of understood that history. Thank you, Madam Chair. But I guess what I'm wanting to know is only 80% of it is being transferred. So I'm just wondering about the other 20%. And if there's a time frame in which does that automatically get returned back to the taxpayer? And when does that calendar start ticking?
Senator,
now
or when? I see the confusion. What I was trying to get at is that there isn't technically a calendar in the per se the way that you're talking about it. It credits back once the bonds have been paid off. So
okay.
If they're 20-year bonds, then that extra 5% credits back. I think that it's a relevant question to ask each of these districts, have you paid off the bonds? Because theoretically what you should be doing is repurposing those dollars that, in a strict fiscal sense, crediting back those dollars that are that accumulation of extra 5%. Otherwise, then there might be a question about whether there's sufficient funds to pay off the bond.
Thank you. So one further question. Have we clarified that? Have the bonds been paid off?
Well, it's a culmination.
Mr. Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's a culmination of buildings. We have 17 schools in the district that are at various states of being paid off. And so what's been happening is the debt excess has been lowering the amount of property taxpayers levied to the taxpayers of the district by about $700,000 a year. So in essence, we have been giving back about $700,000 a year to the taxpayers through these funds lowering their property tax levy. So that's currently what's been happening. So technically, because we have so many buildings, they're all coming off at different times, and so that amount, a certain percent, comes off.
I understand.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any further discussion? Then we will lay this bill over for possible consideration in our omnibus bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Is Senator Peterson here? If not, Senator Harrington?
Sure, thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Senator Harrington.
I'd like to present Senate File 372. Senate File 372 makes two small changes to the current transportation statute. It provides an option for a local board through resolution to provide transportation under a mile for full service or community schools to reduce mobility and stabilize enrollment. And it also permits parents to choose other locations, such as a Boys and Girls Club or other after-school activity for transportation. The need for this bill I can explain quite simply and give you an example from my own background. In the area of Arkwright and Case, there is a school. It's actually Vento School at the time. Across the street from that school, the Sixth O'Tray gang firebombed a house, killing four small children. And within a block of that house, another man was killed walking away from a gambling game. When talking to the post office in that area, they talked about the fact that every 30 days people moved out of the apartments and the houses in that area, causing no lack of instability for the school and in really creating havoc in that building, trying to create a learning environment for those children. In that environment, it would be very difficult to provide any form of real education, and so we seek some latitude for schools to be able to provide transportation outside of such an area through this. There is no fiscal cost to the state. This would be simply using transportation dollars that are already available to the district. Section 1 of this bill defines a full-service school as an area with higher than average crime or other social or economic challenges, and it's also a school that works to provide services for families directly. It also, in Section 2, adds other location chosen by the parents so that it does allow parental choice as to an alternative location that a child could be transferred or transported to, and also adds full-service school zone under the definition of access transportation. I have two, I would call them witnesses, but I think they're called testifiers here. Mary Gilbert, who is going to provide background on the proposed changes, and Andrew Collins, who's going to provide some brief testimony about an Achievement Plus school who would definitely fit into the full-service school model. Ms. Gilbert?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Mary Gilbert. I'm the legislative liaison for the St. Paul Public School. Under current law, a district can provide excess transportation if there's a hazardous crossing or extraordinary traffic, a drug issue, or a crime issue. This bill just provides another exception to provide excess transportation that I think is a little kinder and gentler than saying that the school is in a crime or a drug zone. As Senator Harrington said, a full-service school zone has higher-than-average social and economic challenges. The school is the center for an established partnership with city, county, human service providers, and other nonprofit providers that are supportive to families so that kids can focus on education. The transportation change is intended to promote stability in the school and to reduce mobility. The second change, and I don't know if you recall last year, we added park and recs as an option for schools because under current law, you can designate your home, a relative, a licensed daycare, a licensed residential center. Last year, we added park and rec as a point that you can drop a child. And for older kids who have after-school programs, they often don't go through the daycare licensing laws. And so this just gives parents more can designate another provider for the purposes of transportation. Andrew Collins is here. He was the former principal for one of our Achievement Plus schools, and he can just briefly tell you about why it's important to have access to schools like these.
Sure. Mr. Collins, welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Andrew Collins, Assistant Superintendent of Leadership Development and Turnaround Schools. Again, formerly the principal of Dayton's Bluff Achievement Plus Elementary School. This month, our Board of Education will be voting on a bold new strategic plan that's going to reshape school choice and the way it's offered in St. Paul. It's going to reduce citywide transportation and replicate successful programs across the city. Student achievement. Closing the achievement gap is goal one of this plan, and it would also, part of the plan would reduce the transportation costs and bring about greater efficiencies to the whole system. Part of the plan, as part of the strategic plan, we also want to see that more students get into high-quality programs, such as the one that I had the privilege of leading at Dayton's Bluff Elementary School until last spring, when the superintendent asked me to be a part of her cabinet within central administration. I believe each of you have a handout in front of you that was handed to you. I just want to reference that. I only have a few minutes, but I want to kind of talk about, in some cases, talk about the data and talk about the rationale about having access to these programs, to these successful programs within St. Paul, specifically looking at the evidence of where Dayton's Bluff was nearly a decade ago, having single-digit percent proficiencies in both reading and math, caused was clear evidence of the problem that there was clear infrastructure issues that was correlated to why students weren't achieving. Some of the critical themes that came through the work within building upon the vision of an Achievement Plus full-service community school was addressing issues of climate and culture, strategically empowering students and staff, really establishing quantifiable data points, looking at issues of academic coherence, talking about targeted staff development, and that other piece surrounding embedding learning supports. And again, that's building upon the vision of what a full-service community school is. For the past 5 years, I sustained the improvement that started before me, and more importantly, we basically eliminated the achievement gap in a diverse school where in excess of 90% of the students were eligible for free and reduced lunch. If you kind of continue looking through the handout, you're going to see some of the different achievement results relative to the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment Version 2 in both math and reading, where you'll see Dayton's Bluff by and large exceeding not only the district but also the state proficiencies. If you kind of click to the other two, or not click, if you just look at the other two, they haven't broken out by ethnicities. And this is where it gets really exciting, surrounding kind of the work that I had the privilege of working with an extraordinary group of teachers, committed family members, in delivering high-quality instruction every single day to students. So the achievement results kind of speak for themselves. But as Mary had said, for the past decade, we were an Achievement Plus school. And this is where the full-service community school vision really comes into what Dayton's Bluff is. In partnership with the Wilder Foundation and having aligned programming with the City of St. Paul, having a stronger academic focus, we brought services on-site with additional partners with local community nonprofits and other local service providers, including Ramsey County. We were able to basically create a one-stop shop for families so that students can focus on the learning at school, and we could reduce some of the additional barriers that presented themselves. It's important to note that these services aren't additional services. They're not extra services. But as Mary said, there's an alignment of services that already exist to families. So what we did is basically provide it on-site and increase the level of access to families. Transportation is a barrier. Language is a barrier. It's basically reducing all those barriers and centralizing those services at no cost to the providers for the students and the families to be the true benefactors of this. And that, coupled with a strong instructional model, is the reason Dayton's Bluff is where it is today. So again, I want to kind of, as I said before, we're looking into bringing greater efficiencies to our system, and most of all, trying to bring more students into a program like Dayton's Bluff, where we know families have challenges and concerns. I've spent a ton of hours with students and families from the community who weren't able to really attend the school or choose the school because they didn't have transportation to get there. So I can assure you that the full service school designation would help more students access Dayton's Bluff and other similar schools in St. Paul to get the high quality education they deserve. Thank you for your time and consideration.
So, Senator Harrington and supporters here, this is to expand the zone that you can bring students from to the school, not necessarily helping them exit to another area.
Madam
Chair,
correct? Actually, it does both. It does provide transportation to, and it allows for transportation outside of the traditional zone. Mm-hmm. When a parent designates a after-school facility or an enrichment facility that is outside of the school. So it does actually both, I believe.
But, Senator Harrington, you're also trying to, because of the quality school that you've been describing, you're hoping to attract students to it if they have safe access to it.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. Are there any questions of Senator Harrington? Senator Bonham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Harrington, thank you for bringing forward the bill, and I just want to congratulate the Dayton's Bluff staff for just outstanding results. I mean, really just unpredictable change and growth, and that's the kind of thing we need to figure out how to replicate.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoff. Senator Harrington, this does not have a fiscal impact. What is your pleasure? Would you like to have this bill go out of the committee and go on its own rather than be included in the omnibus?
Madam Chair, that is my pleasure, yes.
Okay. Then would you like to – is there any further discussion?
Well,
Senator Wieger.
Yes. Madam Chair, I'm very supportive. I just wanted to follow up on Senator Bonhoff's applause for the incredible results. And that was what we were hoping for when legislature provided funds for the startup through Wilder.
Yes.
And to see the math achievement proficiency at 100% for Asians, that's incredible. And I was just curious, it's 100% for math for Asians, but their reading proficiency is at 62% in that cohort. Why the difference?
Senator Wieger, part of the difference is also capturing in terms of this, as you look at math at being 100%, one of the pieces, there's an alternative assessment called the MTEL for reading. So relative to a student qualifying based upon their ELL status, taking the MCA2 for reading is they're taking an alternative assessment, which is the MTEL. It's a different state test, and that those percentages weren't captured in these graphs. But what I can assure you in terms of it's looking at what the student's eligibility and criteria is surrounding their newness to the country and what their ELL level is in terms of what tests they qualify for taking. So we're reported accordingly.
So, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Harrington, would you like to move the bill?
I would like to move the bill.
Thank you. Senator Harrington moves that Senate File 372 be recommended to pass and be sent to the floor. Any further discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank
You're
you,
very
Chair.
Welcome. Senator Peterson. Welcome, Senator Peterson. You have Senate File 564 before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We're grateful for the opportunity to present this solution to you. Really what it is, it's a solution to us in central Minnesota and the school district of that includes the city of St. Cloud and some others in regard to a fund transfer, a little bit of a surplus that we have. It was raised through a capital project, and that project is completed. And we're here to simply ask you to allow us to move that surplus and use it for similar capital projects. This is a small amount that you could allow us to move, but yet it would offer significant relief in a very, very tight budget time for our school district, as you can imagine. We believe regional centers are going through significant challenges that can be different from other school districts, and it would be a great help for us for you to allow us to do this. I do have a small amendment that's just a housekeeping thing, a word change. It's the name of the fund that we would like it transferred from. I have some guests here today, the superintendent of schools and the executive business director, that would like to speak in favor of this fund balance transfer as well.
Before they do, Mr. Nauman,
Madam Chair and members, I think the critical question is where similar to the one that we saw before, where are the funds at this point? Are they in the debt redemption fund, the building construction fund?
Debt redemption.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, I think that the amendment would be advisable at that point.
Would somebody like to move the A1 as an author's amendment that changes the language from building construction fund to debt service fund?
I'll move that, Madam Chair.
Senator Hand, I think, has already had his hand up.
Sure. So. I'll make the motion.
Senator Hand, thank you. Has moved the A1 amendment. Makes that terminology change that's being distributed. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Now let's hear from Superintendent.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing us today. My name is Bruce Watkins. I'm the superintendent of schools for ISD 742. That's the St. Cloud Area Schools. With me is Kevin Januszewski, our Executive Director of Business Services, and also further back, one of our board members, Bruce Henches, who chairs our legislative committee. We're here today requesting a fund transfer, and we appreciated the quick action on the amendment because it's from the debt service or debt redemption, same two terms for the same fund, debt service or debt redemption, to the operating capital. And we're here with the support of our board legislative committee, our board of ed, and the community legislative committee that has reviewed this with us. As mentioned earlier, we are a regional center attracting an extremely high percent of special ed. Our district has 9,500 students. We're about a $110 million budget, but we are struggling to cope with growing special ed costs and the state's declining proration for reimbursement there. We are in the process this year of making approximately $3 million in reductions for next year. We're very realistic about the fact that we're not anticipating relief from the state, but we are anxious to seek your approval of the transfer of $650,000 from our debt service fund to our operating capital fund.
So, Superintendent Watkins, is the was this fund filled by a bond referendum, or is this one that is
In 2006, we had a voter-approved referendum for $35 million, which built a new elementary school in St. Joseph, Minnesota, and it also included $10 million for general school improvement purposes and the purchase of textbooks. This is currently our only bonded indebtedness that we have, and we have closed the construction fund because the construction has long since been over and that's done, but now we continue, of course, to have a debt service or a debt redemption fund as we pay back the bonds, and it's from that fund that we've accumulated the $650 that we're requesting for transfer.
So, Superintendent, the bonds have not been paid off, but this is an excess amount from the 105%
from the over levy. Thank you. Yep.
Are there any other questions you have of Superintendent or Senator Peterson? All right. If not, we will lay this over for consideration in the omnibus bill.
Thank you very much.
So we have one bill left, and Senator Howe has just appeared.
His entrance.
It was a grand entrance just in time. Senator Howe is before us the Senate File 586. That is also a fund transfer request, but a little different wrinkle to it. Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I apologize. I was having a question answered for me in the Energy Commission there that's going on. This Senate File 586 is that you have in front of you is just basically an extension of a law that was passed in 2001, and it allows the independent school district in Lewiston, school district number 857, to transfer up to $175,000 from its capital accounts in its general fund or from its restricted general fund to the debt redemption fund. and it does not have any fiscal impact. It has been allowed to happen through from 2002 to 2012, and this would just change the date to allow it through 2024.
So, Senator, how does the when it says permanently transfer up to $175,000, is that per year or just a total amount in that period of time?
That is, I believe it's per year, up to $175,000 per year.
Senator Bonner.
Madam Chair, Senator Howe, could you share some background on this? Why was this first done, if you know, and why do they need it to continue? This seems unusual. Maybe Mr. Nauman has some history about this. I don't recall a district having an ongoing ability to do this kind of a transfer each year. Well,
Madam Chair, if I could speak.
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair and Senator Bonoff, good question, and I think we can let the Senate staff explain this, but I just want to mention that usually the reason it happens one time is you usually have a district coming in asking it to go the opposite way, to take it from their debt service fund and put it into their general fund. So this is a case where you've got a school district that's trying to put it into their debt service fund. So this with that, I'll let the.
Mr. Nauman?
Madam Chair and members, I was intrigued by this too. I was here when this was done and I didn't remember it. It was Senate File 33 and Senator Kierlin offered the bill at the time. It was included in the omnibus bill and they were given authority for 10 years. That was the year that the Governor Ventura's big plan was implemented, so there were a lot of things going on that year, but I don't remember the details of why we. Why we chose to do this on an ongoing basis.
So, Senator Howe, were you able to find out any more details as to how this money is used and why the debt service funds or the debt redemption fund needs this on an annual basis? And
Madam Chair, I did. I reached out to the superintendent from the Lewiston School District, Dr. Mountpleasure. And I did receive an email from him, which I'll read to the committee here. The reason, Senator Howell, the reason the transfer legislation is usually for 1 year only is because generally people are requesting that they be able to transfer money from the debt service fund to the general fund. If you have a debt service obligation, you are required to levy 105% of the funds necessary to meet the obligation. If the obligation is $300,000, the district is required to levy $315,000, and the following year the extra is subtracted from the required payment to figure out the amount necessary to pay the obligation, and the district is required to levy 105% of that amount. Sometimes that excess amount builds up a bit, and a district will request that they be allowed to transfer the excess from the debt service fund to the general fund. Sometimes it's allowed, sometimes it isn't. School districts cannot transfer funds between operating and non-operating funds without specific authorization. When we proposed this legislation the first time, I was fairly new in the district, and we are in SOD. What this legislation does is allows us to transfer a portion of the local levy impact of a proposed referendum to the debt service fund. This causes our debt service fund balance to go up, and the state then reduces the debt service levy to 105% of what is necessary to pay our debt service obligation. And as you can see in the legislation, it says, in subsection B, starting at 1.13, the eligible debt service revenue and the debt service equalization aid, if any, for independent school district number 857 Lewiston must be determined prior to the annual transfer of the general fund revenue authorization in subdivision 1.
Mr. Nauman, can you give us any further insight onto this?
Madam Chair, I did have a chance to visit a little bit with the department on this, and I can tell you that on lines 1.11, where we're providing the district under the language of the bill authority to transfer from either its capital accounts or its unrestricted general fund to the debt redemption fund, to the extent that they choose to make the transfer from operating capital, there's existing authority and permanent law for them to do that. So a district can make a transfer from operating capital into its debt redemption fund to pay for bonds. There's no authority needed for that. However, capital accounts could include health and safety or some of the other capital accounts that are not just operating capital. So perhaps the district is looking to use different funds than just operating capital. Authority is needed to transfer from the unrestricted general fund because there is a prohibition under Chapter 123B that precludes the district from making a transfer of that ilk.
The part that was puzzling me is the district was in statutory operating debt. Did I hear that correctly?
If you were in statutory operating debt,
why would you take money out of operating funds? It would put you further in the hole and put it into debt redemption. I don't know if you can answer that or if Mr. Nauman can, but or Shelby, or I'm looking here. Senator Hall, did I hear you correctly?
Yeah, when it was first proposed, but I think that is exactly what the superintendent said. When we proposed this legislation the first time, I was fairly new and the district was in SOD. So I look at this as that they're taking the funds and put it into their debt service fund. They're not taking it the other way.
No, but Senator Hall, they're trying to protect it from something?
Madam Chair, I guess, I think there's a lot of questions here. I think it is an open question whether the district has sufficient funds to make this transfer. And that's something that is, maybe we should do a little spade work on to make sure that that's in fact the case.
Madam Chair, and the superintendent is willing to come and testify before the body. It was just a rather short notice of this bill being put in front of the committee.
I know. Apologize for that. But Senator Nelson.
I would like to know how would doing this, because it is so unusual to transfer the funds this way into the debt redemption fund, how would doing this affect any other type of aid that the school district would receive? Like, would it reflect equalization aid? What kind of aid would having less money in either the unrestricted general fund or the capital accounts be affected?
Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, I don't believe, even with paragraph B, that it would affect the school's debt service equalization calculation, primarily because they're off the formula and they're not getting any equalization.
Okay, so you think making this transfer would not affect in any way the type of aid that a school district would receive from the state?
Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, I'm always nervous about saying in any way, but it's my best judgment that at this point that we can be fairly certain that it's not going to affect a debt service equalization calculation.
But we should know about all the others because we have lots of ways of figuring aid in this state when it comes to state funding. It's pretty complicated, so we should probably know that.
Senator Bono.
Madam Chair, my question was along similar lines, just wondering if there's any precedent for, if it's general state aid dollars going to pay actually interest on bonds. I don't know if that's something that we allow, because our formula is supposed to be for per pupil spending. So if we transfer this money, if it could come from unrestricted general funds, that seems like a different purpose than that.
So, Senator Howe, do you know whether they have outstanding bonds that this is used to pay off?
Madam Chair, I do not know, but I do know that the fiscal notes said there's no fiscal impact to the state with this. It appears I had two. Maybe it's just a copy of the same fiscal note here, but there's no impact to the state, I think.
I understand that this Lewiston does have an operating referendum, which is equalized. I don't know how that would affect that. I think we definitely have some questions. We will lay this over for possible inclusion, but I think we probably do need some more questions answered about this, because it is such a unique situation to understand that dynamic. But obviously it was approved for a period of time, but there's something going on here. Now, I never underestimate superintendent's ability to think of creative financing mechanisms, so it would be fun to find out what this really is all about.
Madam Chair, I think Dr. Bruce Montpleasure would be very willing to come and testify in front of this body, certainly we can reschedule it for him to be here.
We will. We may well do that, or at least have an opportunity to converse in some other way if that's not possible before we finalize our bill. So, if there are no further questions, we will lay this bill on the table for consideration for the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you,
Senators. And that brings us to the end of our agenda. Full 8 minutes before bewitching hour. If there is no further business to come before the committee is adjourned.
Yeah, figure that out. But it also, if they did this when they were initially in steps,
that doesn't happen.
How's your bill come?
So weird.
And do they need to
do you think about it each day? You're on to this bill.
Interesting point.
Always
introduces more questions.
I have a feeling it has something to do with state aid.
The statutory operating debt is only general fund, but presumably they would have debt across the board.
You're very welcome.
SOD, but SOD also gives them additional levy.
No, the structural is
very important. Well, people can go on general orders, and if he's ready.
She's weird. And then I'll get it scheduled in the House.
That's general.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kevin Nansen, one of those two.
Colin or Kevin? Okay. Yeah, because we want to start.
Okay.
Space.
I would think they probably
in education, the same percentage of money that we just was funding.
So what's when they're coming here?
Because the bill is may have double dip state aid.
Oh.
I guess we gotta bring the MMB up.
Oh, we're getting the superintendent out. We smoked her out. How about that?
We just wanted to know.
Have you seen you, my name? Senator, have you seen this?
Well, I've met her, but I haven't seen her around here.
I know. So if they get out main care and they have
a car. No, I know. Yeah, you do look familiar, too.
Yeah, well, I think
they go through this normal.
Okay.
Or table. My two categories. Table things. Hi, Casey.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
It's the last resort. Don't want to go there because you can't get your shirt.
Who's he with? Yeah.
The one that just walked out the door. Right? He was up here at the desk. Shelby, who was the fellow that was talking to you?
But if you are.
Who's that?
Well, he was up at the table. He just went out.
Oh, Josh Downham? Yeah. Josh Downham? I think he's down the center. Downham. Yeah.
Downham.
Who's
he with? Like,
I don't know.
They all start running. They all start running together.
Yep, that's right.
Paracorn, there you go.
Okay, I'm like, I don't know who you were.
Thank you.
Thank you. He used to be half staff. I knew that one.
Well, if they were working.
Sometimes my memory is sharp, and then there are distinct lapses. there was something about the numbers that was not good, and I
know the word.
You guys have a second to look at this?
Sure.
All right, good.
Oh, 11. No. Well, thanks for
donating.
Getting them.
God. Just give them some money.
Yeah.
If he yields.
That personal care attendant. That. That was, it's so huge for them just to come. And I appreciate that.
I've dealt with them before.
Like, I need
to do something. Regardless.
Are you talking about carbon tax?
That's how I know.
Fancy wants to go to a basketball game.
Yes.
What do we do testing for?
Do
we do it several times?
Shelby, she's got.
Hey,
hello.
Yep. I'm going to be
out.
Right?
Right. Yes, ma'am.